Hello and welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Vision. This is your host, Greg Nielsen, President and CEO of Nielsen Training and Consulting, where we work with nonprofit organizations all across the country to translate your vision into reality. I'm excited to have you and welcome you all back to another podcast episode. And just a quick reminder before we get started, if you're enjoying the podcast, and I always love to see our listenership numbers increasing, our community growing, remember to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. And even more important than that, remember to share the podcast with your friends, your colleagues, your coworkers as we continue to grow this community. On today's episode, we are going to be talking about a topic that is relevant for all nonprofit organizations, and that is grant writing and tips and strategies to maximize your success in grant writing. And there is no one better to join us for this conversation than my colleague, Holly Rustick. Holly is the president and CEO of Grants. I'm going to let her introduce her company in just a minute. She is also a best-selling author, and we're going to give you plenty of opportunity at the end of the episode of where you can find Holly, how you can get access to some of her books and materials. Holly, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Gregory. This is awesome. I'm really excited to be on your show. As you know, I have a podcast too, Grant Writing and Funding. So really excited to be on another podcaster's show, as I love podcasts and I love the people that listen to podcasts because you guys are awesome. You're out there walking or cooking or whatever you're doing and you are consuming this amazing information. So big shout out to you guys.
Appreciate that. Holly, this is, as I mentioned, a topic that's relevant for all nonprofit organizations. Some of us have a great relationship with grant writing and we love it and it gives us energy. Others, it's a struggle, right? And you have one of the most fascinating stories of any of the grant writers that I've come across in my career. If you're comfortable, I would welcome and invite you to share a little bit of how did you get into this work? What was your background that led you to your grant writing professional services?
Sure. Yeah, thank you for that. Thanks for digging around and looking at it because I it's fun to share this story. And so as your listeners might know, I'm actually based in Guam and I'm originally from Michigan, but I've lived in a lot of different places in the States, kind of grew up with like hippie parents and then moved abroad. And I lived abroad for a long time, living in different countries. I did my master's degree in Belgium. And, you know, I also worked in Kuwait. So when I was younger, I was working in Kuwait as a teacher. And this was, and then the back in the early like 2000s, like mid to early 2000s, like, and all of a sudden, that was when in 2004 the Asian tsunami hit, right? So that rocked the entire world quite literally, and you know, just everything, right? To really see the impact of the world's biggest tsunami that we've seen on record. And so it devastated an area in Indonesia and, you know, especially. So I was teaching in Kuwait and there were some opportunities available to go and work in a nonprofit in Indonesia to help with the community development. So, you know, as many people, I feel like so many grant writers, it wasn't their trajectory. They're just having some degrees now, like in grant writing, but it's not really like a career pathway for so many people, right? And it was the same for me. I went to Indonesia to do community work in a nonprofit, to do out there, you know, boots on the ground, getting into the community and helping. And while I was there, what I realized was, you know, we were a very small new nonprofit that just kind of emerged from this disaster. And what we saw was there's a lot of UN organizations. They had a lot of the money and we worked so in the community. I was learning the language, really, you know, talking to people, very, you know, community grassroots oriented. And what they were telling me was, you know, Holly, there's money out there and we need money for certain projects, but we don't know how to talk to these people in these UN organizations who are driving around in armored cars with security. They're federally gatekeepers for real, right? You know what I mean? So, and I was like, oh, I can help you write something. Like I can talk to these people. I have some meetings with them, you know, even though I kind of had a little tiny corner at the table, you know what I mean? But at least I was there.
That's right.
So, yeah. So I started what I really felt like was I was the liaison. And even to this day, right, when I'm a grant writer, I really feel like that in a lot of ways is I'm connecting money to mission. And that's exactly how I felt like it was there. It was, okay, I can help. Give me your ideas. What really needs to happen? What's going to make impact? I can write it up in a way that I know that these organizations want to look at, and then I can submit it and have that kind of conversation and bridging not just language. I guess there's two different languages, but they're the language of grant writing. Even if you're English first in these grants and it's an English first grant, there's still a different language per se, right? So I didn't even realize that I was writing grants or it was a grant. So I was like, I'm helping you get money and connecting it to mission. And I loved it. I was like, this is so cool. And I really found a lot of meaning in the work. And when I did go back to the States, I was working outside of DC, and this was, you know, in the mid early 2000s, like this was 2006 by then. And I got a job at a virtual grant writing company, which back in the day, that was like, woohoo, it's kind of innovative, right? So, and we were based outside of DC. We had clients all around the world writing different grants. And I had so much fun because I loved having the variety of clients, right? In different programs and working on different things and really being able just to work on grants, right? And on funding development and really staying in that lane. After that, I've worked in other places as well. Here on Guam, I've worked within nonprofits. I serve on boards. And I've done all of the little bits and pieces. I've been a federal grant reviewer for 10 years as well. So really seeing the ins and out, but that's really what, sorry, it's a long story, but that's really what it led me into it was just a fascination of helping money to mission, right? And seeing there's a gap.
It's a fascinating story, especially, you know, I don't know if you feel the same way. So many of the successful grant writers that I've met in my career, as you said, didn't go to school to become a grant writer, didn't go to college saying, you know what I want to be when I get out of college? I want to be a grant writer. But they found a love of a mission. And they mm-hmm. fell in love with, this is the challenge that we're trying to solve. This is the Rubik's Cube that we have that's creating complexity or difficulty in our community. And I want to be that connector that helps bring resources to address that situation. I think the greatest grant writers, the most successful grant writers, start from that perspective of, how can I be a connector? How can I open doors? How can I bring resources to a problem?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like figuring out a puzzle using language, right? So, and even numbers, like a lot of people are like, well, I can't do the budget section because I'm a writer, right? And I'm like, no. Like the budget is words too. There's budget narratives and you have to make sure the numbers, right, relate to the words. And there's so much like this puzzle and creating, when you put all the pieces together, you see the big picture. And there's such an accomplishment of that because each piece of that puzzle, right, means something so dynamic for the nonprofit, right? We just, we're going to do this and throw something together real quick. Like it really, you have to take intention and thinking. And I know there's a lot of talk about ChatGPT right now, like, writers? And I was like, a while, maybe one day, but because it's a thought process that goes into developing this business plan, really, right? So it really does take, you might be able to get some assistance with it, but there's really a lot of thought that needs to connect all the pieces. So yeah, it's exciting.
Holly, I was talking with a grant writer one time and, you know, I asked her, I said, how do you approach a grant? So when you're, you know, when you're looking at it for the first time, you're sitting down, you're thinking about how am I going to structure this proposal? And her answer was fascinating to me. So I'm hoping you can comment on it also. She said, I think about a grant as though I am taking the funder by the hand and leading them on a tour of our organization or our program and our approach to solving a challenge that we have. I thought that imagery, that metaphor was really powerful for me. It kind of unlocked it in my own mind. Okay, this is not a transaction. This is not a, how well can I write an essay, you know, like we're in high school. This is really about taking someone on a journey with you so that they fall in love with the organization and the mission in the same way that you have.
Oh, I love that. That's such a great image. And I love that it's so personable. And I think, you know, that's what a lot of people forget when they write grants is, there's a grant funding cycle open. I'm just going to submit. I'm going to send out a whole bunch of the same exact one to a bunch of different funding sources. And then I don't hear back. And now I'm kind of mad at that funding source because I didn't hear back, or I got a no. So I'm taking it personal, or I'm only going to approach them when the funding cycle is open and ask for money. And I'm like, that's not a relationship, people.
Right.
Take gave you once a year was like, give me money. And then they get mad at you and you don't, or you don't even have a conversation. That is not about building a relationship. And people forget that because I think of the process of how the grant system is set up. So you can't fault them, but we need to educate and say, it's also about, you know, I say, you can reach out to those funding sources anytime. Try to build relationships, even federal ones. I say, you call, they put the program officer's number in there, their email, you call them, they're on speed dial. Even before you submit the grant, say, hey, we're thinking about submitting this, the grant for this program. Is this a good fit? Sure, they can't give you away like, yes, this is getting funded. They can never say that. But they can say, you know what, maybe that doesn't align completely, but maybe this would be a better angle. And at least they know you, right? Like you start to develop a relationship. So I love that personable aspect to it, because it is.
I like how you frame it around relationship, because it just the way the grant system is set up, it can be an impersonal process. I'm looking at a foundation. I'm seeing, you know, they have an online application. We're going to enter the demographic information, the budget, and all the rest. I think you're right. The challenge is, how can I personalize what is otherwise an impersonal system?
Absolutely. And you can, right? Especially with foundations, like your board members, like, are you out there rubbing shoulders? Are you going to, like, the Chamber of Commerce is a great place for nonprofits to go, because even if those people aren't necessarily, you know, they're running businesses, but a lot of them are on boards of nonprofits. A lot of them are on boards of foundations, right? So it's really about, where can I really get the human aspect in this relationship, right? To really develop something strong. And you can reach out to people. And yeah, they might not always respond. But I mean, the other thing too is with the social media has been a great way to bypass gatekeepers as well, right? Because on LinkedIn, if you put in a foundation, you're actually going to see the people, the names that, you know, are those people that you can directly contact. You can start, I mean, don't harass them, you guys, but you can start like, you know, putting on their foundation, you can start commenting, sharing it, developing relationships even that way is really good, right? So be consistent about who, think about it too. You're going to be dating them, right? Like I kind of think of it like this dating game too. And you know, you want to actually approach foundations or funding sources that you value as well. Remember, we're not begging for money. It is a relationship that we want to have. So you're also interviewing them in a sense, as much as they should be interviewing you and your nonprofit, right? So great, I think that's important to consider as well. Like, are we aligned with our values? And is it somebody we really want to develop a long-term relationship with, right? So coming at it from that aspect really changes that. Oh, we're begging for money. Oh, they didn't give me any money. They don't like me. You know what I mean? Like, these are just kind of behavioral issues around money, right? And because of, like you said, the system of how it's set up, it can kind of lead us that way. But I think we need to pull back and look at relationships too. Mm-hmm.
That's a great point, Holly. It leads me to my next question. A lot of my clients may be executive directors, or listeners may be executive directors who may not have a grant writer on staff. They may be the grant writer themselves. Yeah. An initial question often comes up, where do I start? If I'm new to this, or if I am looking to expand our grant portfolio, looking to expand our funding base, how do I identify potential funders who align with our mission?
Yeah, absolutely. It's about, just like you would with donors or with any other kind of funding source, we really need to understand, like, what are we looking for? And with, you know, especially with executive directors, like, going back to your mission, always, 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 because a lot of people, here's another way that people just kind of sink into grants is they may see like the dollar signs, right? Because that's what they're looking at. They're looking for money, right? Totally. But sometimes they'll be like, oh, that's $100 million, $1 million, this and that, right? And then it's like they start to develop a program then for it that they don't already have and need the money for that's existing. Right. Because they're kind of like seduced, right, by these numbers and this opportunity, which is okay. But the thing is, when it's not okay is when you mission drift. And when all of a sudden, even if you got that grant, it probably wouldn't be very helpful. Like, there's going to be a lot that goes into that, right? So I think really understanding what your mission is, what your program is that you want funded, right? And then looking for funding sources is the way. Because I think the other way sometimes, let's just look and see what's out there and then develop something around that. That never really serves a nonprofit well. You know what I mean? Like, it can...
it's so important to know who you are and also who you aren't, right?
Yes.
I think that, you know, that we don't do this, or we really do this well, but this is not a lane that we operate in, is so important when you're approaching grant funding, so that you avoid that drift. The other important point, and I'm curious your perspective on this, is staying connected to the community that you're serving. Again, as you said, sometimes you can get seduced by, oh, there's a funder out there that wants to fund X, Y, or Z. But it's always important to remain connected to the community that you're serving. Is that something that they in fact need? Is that something that they in fact want? Is that something that's going to be beneficial to the community that you're serving? How do you recommend that grant writers, executive directors stay connected to those that they're serving?
Right. I mean, that's such a good point. And, you know, Gregory, so I really look at this, and what we do in my grant writing master course as well is we develop a grant writing template. And, that's really an important thing to do. And what you can do through that, and that's even kind of what we were talking about before, is identify what you want to do first before you go after grants. Mm-hmm. And a part of that template, a part of what you can do is you can create, you know, the first thing you need to do actually is the research, right? And that's where you can do some surveys with your beneficiaries. You can do some small focus groups. And really get in there and find out what the needs are. And just as an example of why this is so important is because, like, one of the nonprofits I was working with, they said, okay, we want to go after this grant. What we think we need it for is to put more recovery services for people with individuals with recovery, right, in recovery. And they said, they really need more recovery services. We don't offer enough. So we're like, okay, well, that's at face value. That sounds, you know, that's okay. Yeah. Right. But that's at face value. So what they did was the next step was the research before they even like went there. Right. Which was so smart. They had a focus group. They asked their people, they said, hey, you know, what's the real issues here? What are the needs? Da, 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 da. And what they found out was they said the people in recovery and their beneficiaries that they were serving said, we don't need more services. We need transportation to the existing services. Right. So that was the actual gap. And a lot of times nonprofits will think because they're in it, we know the gaps, like the leaders, but their beneficiaries may say something completely different, right? So that's why it's so important to have that research. And if they would have applied for a grant just to have more recovery services, even if they would have got it, they wouldn't have reached their objectives. They would have failed, right? But now that they wrote, they didn't have to rewrite their grant because they were starting there. So when they developed their grant, they said, we need a van, we need to have a driver, and they wanted to employ one of their beneficiaries then to actually drive people into the recovery services. And then we actually had information to support the need too. We had data, right? So it was that's just an example of like how that's so important. And like you said, you need to connect to your community, to your beneficiaries, to your cause area, and ask them what the need is. Because as much as you think you know, without doing research, without asking questions, without having, you know, conversations and getting data, you don't really know. And then it's only going to increase your ability to get the funding because you're going to have more specific data that you can present as well.
And it sounds like that's also a key part of the other phrase I hear from grant writers all the time is our case for support. And I think that research, that foundational piece, that data piece becomes an important part of the case for support. As organizations are thinking through, maybe they've never built a case for support before, any tips or strategies that you can offer to nonprofit executives or grant writers as they think about how to develop that case for support?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of what we're talking about. It is like doing the research, right? It is talking to your beneficiaries. It is talking to other nonprofits too that serve aligned gaps, right? There's a lot you can do. So you can bring out testimonials. You can bring, right? A lot of times people think it's either like grants are so dry. And I'm like, actually, there's so much, I get so much more emotion in a lot of ways from grants when they're based in data and they have testimonials and they have research that supports the need than maybe a fundraising appeal that's just super creative and wanting to pull my heartstrings while Sarah McLachlan plays in the background. Like that's going to maybe evoke an immediate, but I'm really not going to understand the need fully, right? But when I see these other, like you said, case for support, right, then I'm really understanding the need because I see it, right? I see surveys, testimonials, citations, right? All of those things that are important to go into a grant.
I think one of the other, you know, one of the final topics to touch on is, again, when I talk to fundraisers, I ask them a lot of times, what is the one or two biggest skills that you need in order to be a successful fundraiser or grant writer? And the two things I hear most often are, number one, you need to know how to listen, and you need to know that no doesn't always mean no for all time. Sometimes it's not right now, or right. Sometimes it's we can't help you today, but I know someone else who might. And so I did talk a little bit about, in your experience in grant writing, kind of the role of listening to a funder as they give you feedback, whether they've funded you or declined, and also that how to manage the issues of timing and time frame.
Sure. Yeah. And that's a great question too, because listening to it doesn't need to be audibly listening, right? So for grant writers, a lot of times, we're kind of behind closed doors. We don't have all of those up close, conversations, but listening too is if you get feedback, even on a grant that got declined, and the federal grants are really fantastic about actually giving you feedback. A lot of times foundations won't, they just will say, they don't have the capacity. So I'm going to talk about those kind of separately real quick. But if you get the federal feedback, right, because they actually have to do panels and write and all of that, use that feedback because they're going to give you weaknesses and they're going to give you strengths. So you take every single area that was weak and you use it, you make it better, you submit again. Most of the time, you're not going to get awarded the first year. Don't take it personally. Don't feel rejected. Like, I know you got to grow some thick skin, but take it as a learning curve to say, okay, this funding cycle is going to be open again. I'm going to take what I've learned. I'm actually going to read the comments as part of that listening, right? And I'm going to take it in, and then I'm just going to make this better. And even if that funding cycle doesn't open again and I don't resubmit this, I can submit this to another place. Because remember, we're developing it for a program that you actually need funding for.
Right.
So you're going to submit it somewhere else, or we're going to turn it into a two-page solicitation letter for a corporate solicitation. We're going to use it on our copy for our website, right? So take their feedback and do spruce it up. The other thing, part of listening from the foundation side now, where they may not give you the feedback just because they're just overwhelmed in the capacity and all of that, right? A way you can listen is then to really go into their website, read all about their priorities, their values, all of that, and really say, was our program really aligned with this? Even going in and looking at their 990s. Now that's the best way that you can actually really understand, because sometimes you'll be like, but it does say this, it is so aligned. And then you look at their 990s and you're like, yeah, they don't fund any of the stuff that they say that they support, right? So that's the real trick right there. And you can get that information, it's online. They have to submit it. It's public. You can definitely dive into it. So those are ways that you can listen in kind of a different way, but to really be curious once again, like, who am I going to be dating? Let's do a little background check. Yeah. So, you can go into that, but do take the feedback and know that just because your program may not get approved the first year or even the second year does not mean that your program is awful. Like, it doesn't, right? It means there's so many different layers to this, but all of the work that you put into it, if you're developing, the grant from a position, like we said, of developing a program that really needs to be funded, like I said, you can use that and turn it into a fundraising letter. You can use all the work that you've done with all that research and everything and put copy on your website, do a donation drive with that data. Like, it's never to waste. Ever, if you do it from a place of this is what we need it for, instead of just trying to develop a program to fit a grant that you don't really need.
Yeah. Holly, all the way from Guam, you are bringing the energy. Yeah. You are bringing tremendous information for our listeners. I've enjoyed the conversation. I thank you for your time today. For those who are interested in connecting with you directly or learning more about your programs and services that benefit nonprofit leaders and grant writers, getting a copy of your book, for example, how can folks reach out to you directly?
Sure. Yeah. They can definitely go to grantwritingandfunding.com, all one word. We also have our podcast. So if you're podcast listeners out there, you can jump over to Grant Writing and Funding. It's the same thing, right? The basics that you can find us. But yeah, you guys can definitely check. We have a YouTube channel as well. So if you're on YouTube, Grant Writing and Funding, and we have a ton of resources for you. We have a free grant writing class that you can take right away, get a lot of information. If you're just like, okay, I want to start learning this and I really want to do it so I'm not overwhelmed. You nonprofit leaders out there, you have so much on your plate. You know what I mean? Like, maybe you don't need to learn this, but if you're hiring an intern, you can't just expect them to know how to write a grant. Get them a course, get them a book, get them something, even through my free course, like get them something so they are prepared so they can actually feel like they're a part of your organization. That can be a great way that you can kind of, I know you said, what's a way that they can do it? But honestly, I think a lot of nonprofit leaders can offload grant writing too, because they need to focus on their organization, right? And they can, a lot of people want to learn grant writing. It is a great skill, but give them the resources to do it well and they will stay with your organization, right? So there's definitely a lot of opportunity there.
Mm-hmm. Holly, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Really enjoyed the conversation. Nice. And for those who are listening to the podcast, I encourage you to check out Holly's podcast as well. And also, you can always find us online at www.nielsenconsults.com. Also, encourage you and love connecting with you all on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And look forward to being back soon with another episode. Everybody stay safe and stay well.